Homelessness continues to be an issue that plagues the country, especially in major cities. The latest data from the Department of Housing and Urban Development shows Washington, D.C. has the highest number of homeless people per capita in the country, followed closely by Hawaii, New York, and California. WBUR's podcast Endless Thread looked at homelessness through the chatter about it on Reddit and stumbled onto a conversation called Stop Giving Money to Panhandlers, Please. They found a man named Shane Coraya, someone who was homeless in New York City for a period of time and who bucks many of the common assumptions about members of the homeless population. Endless Thread's Ben Johnson has the story.
Shane lives in Washington Heights, near the very top of Manhattan Island above Harlem, near the A train. It's the longest train line in New York's subway system, and it has some significance in Shane's life. We'll get to that.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks so much for having us.
Shane's 29 years old, short dark hair, clean shaven. His apartment is tidy. He lives with a couple of roommates and a turtle named Little Dude.
I've had him since I was 14. Actually, fun fact, when I was on the subway, a couple of nights he was just in my pocket buttoned up.
Shane's family is from Guyana, but he was born in the Bronx, where his family lived in a brownstone near the projects. He went to Catholic school, St. Jerome. He has two older brothers and an older sister, but he's not exactly sure how old they are.
You know, I still don't know that. Like, grew up as a Jehovah's Witness, and we didn't celebrate birthdays, preach the word of God, do memorial service, that's about it.
Shane thinks he was around 4 years old when his parents got a divorce. It was a bad one.
All of a sudden, we weren't spending nights in the house anymore, we were spending nights in hotels. My dad was upping his level of harassment against my mom.
Okay.
Really messed up stuff, like her breaks would get tampered with, and just the sense of safety really deteriorated.
Shane thinks he was about 10 when he and his mom go to live with his sister and her new husband in Washington State. There, they escape his dad's emotional and physical abuse, but new problems pop up. First, as Shane hits his early adolescence, a truth starts to reveal itself, a truth that makes his life as a very observant Jehovah's Witness kind of awkward. He starts to realize that he's gay. At first, he thinks he'll fix it with God's help. But eventually the stress of being gay and a Jehovah's Witness leads him to do something unfortunate.
One night my mom was home. She was scrapbooking in the living room. And I saw her and I really wanted to tell her. But I didn't know what to say. So, you know, I took a bunch of her pills from the bathroom and just started popping them. And then I don't know what went through my mind, but I just got really scared, and so I went into the living room very calmly. Uh-huh. I was like, Mom, I just took a bunch of pills, and yeah.
Because Shane tells his mom what he's done, they get to the hospital in time. And shortly after this brush with death, Shane learns something that gives him hope. There are other gay people in the world.
Thank God for AOL and those free CDs, because, like, my mom was not going to pay for the internet. So, like, AOL kept me online. If it were not for access to an outside opinion, I would probably be a repressed Jehovah's Witness somewhere or dead. You know, first it was, like, realizing that there were other people like me, that there were even other gay Jehovah's Witnesses, was flooring, you know?
What Shane finds online brings him to this decision.
I remember the night that I came out to my mom. Mm-hmm. I was actually hoping that she would, like, take me to the elders and, like, fix me. Wow. Like, I couldn't do it myself. And she looked at me and she said, "Why is it my children become my worst fears?"
At this point, Shane is around 13. His mom isn't really talking to him. He's being bullied at school. So he does the only thing he thinks he can do. He reaches out to the guy whose abuse sent him across the country in the first place, his dad, who says, "Come live with me in New York." Shane says yes.
The only things that I knew about my dad was, like, really bad stuff. Like, my entire adolescence was spent ensuring that there would be no, like,
contact.
Yeah.
When Shane moves in with his dad, he kind of starts a new life. He's no longer religious, and he decides to tell his dad the truth.
I told him that I was gay, and at first he was super cool with it. He was like, "You know, we will get through this together."
Right.
But I was like, no, I'm gay. very quickly after that, that compassion started fading away.
Why?
I think he started realizing that I didn't want to change.
This environment leads to some pretty big fights between Shane and his dad. A few times the cops get called. Things generally escalate. Then comes Shane's 18th birthday.
You know, my dad comes home and he's like, "Are you still gay?" And I'm like getting ready to go to dinner. He's like, "Yeah, Dad, I'm still gay and I'm going out to dinner with my boyfriend." And so I go. My high school boyfriend at the time, you know, comes home with me. And I'm trying to open the door with my keys. They're not working.
Locks changed. Shane is on the street as a high school senior. Shane goes to stay with his boyfriend and his boyfriend's mom, but it's only temporary. And he starts going through the process of finding shelter.
It was like the worst scavenger hunt. Like, you just have to go from place to place, and every place has different requirements, and you don't know which one's ultimately going to give you shelter.
Eventually, Shane finds a homeless shelter in Brooklyn called Independence Inn.
My first night there, there's a closet. I still have a little dude with me, so I'm putting him in the closet. Underneath my pillow was a fork that had been, like, melded, like the two outside tongs had been, like, pushed down to, like, create, like, a shiv. So I was like, great, where the hell am I?
Shane gets a job working the front desk at a hair salon in Manhattan. Then one day, Shane's late getting back to Independence Inn, and he misses curfew. They are real strict about curfew.
So I slept on the train. Went to school, went to work, still got to earn that paycheck hourly. There was only like 2 weeks left of the semester. And it was kind of just like every night trying to figure out like where to go, what to do.
Shane found solace in the things that were routine. His classes, for instance. But then he graduates. High school is officially over.
That was when I actually got really, really scared. Because all of a sudden, my day had time in it that I couldn't fill.
Remember when I said the A-train had a significance in Shane's life? Well, now the A-train is his bed. This is maybe his lowest point. 32 miles, stretching from the top of Manhattan through Brooklyn and out to far Rockaway, Queens. This stretch gives homeless Shane the best chance for almost 2 hours of uninterrupted sleep before he gets kicked off at the end of the line and he has to wait to get back on and head the other way.
I just slept on the train until I needed to go to the first thing that I had to do. And that also starts interfering with work, because you don't want to be the dude with the turtle in your pocket who, like, ruined your coat because you used to just all over it, and, like, going to work in a rumpled suit because you have no place to put it. And that was when I actually started to feel homeless. And that's when I started telling my friends.
Here, Shane's story could have gone really downhill. It's easy for many to assume that the reason someone is on the street is that they can't get it together. But Shane had it together. And instead of totally falling apart, Shane becomes really self-sufficient. Eventually, his drive for independence and his hourly paycheck get Shane his own little room in a friend's apartment. He manages to put himself through college. Then he keeps going. He finds a way to go to law school, and he gets a law degree. Because it was the court and law enforcement that brought order to the chaos of Shane's life growing up, when it came to protecting him and his mom from his dad's abuse, for instance. Today, Shane works for the Bronx District Attorney's Office, the same office that, years ago, brought domestic violence charges against his dad. One of the other things on Shane's impressive resume is his work for New York's Department of Homeless Services, something he did when he got back on his feet. There, he realized something.
One of the first women that I met, I was like, "Hey, I just want to share with you that I was homeless, so I understand what it is that you're going through." And she was like, "Oh, so you've got two kids." And I was like, "Nope.
Never mind."
Yeah, exactly. That's when I became a lot more compassionate toward my story just being one of many.
Still, Shane has a surprising answer to the question that started this whole story. Should you give money to panhandlers?
You know, if you're triaging the homeless population, the ones who don't really know how to even ask for help are the ones that I think need it the most. For people who actually go up to another person and ask them for money, I always state, you know, I don't carry cash, because, and this might be its own form of anger, but it's kind of like,
it was so hard for me to ask for anything. You know, I know that this will not be beneficial.
Shane's ability to rely on himself and a strength of character that formed despite growing up in a broken family led him out of the woods, off the A train, and into his Washington Heights apartment, where he has now lived for 6 years. He has his opinions, but he knows he's just one story out of many. His story is still going. He's not quite home yet. He's working on it.
I've been able to do the basics of home. But what I'm starting to understand is also necessary for the concept of home is like people that you can rely on and trust and feel with. And I'm not good with that yet. So I'm learning how to be vulnerable with other people. And I think that's when I'll really have a sense of home.
For Here and Now, I'm Ben Brock Johnson.
And for more on the podcast Endless Thread, go to hereandnow.org.